Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 181 of the Intercooler Podcast with me, Dan Prosser, and Andrew Frankel, my co-host. This week's episode is a bit of a magazine-style show where we cover lots of different topics. We're talking about a big event that we were at yesterday at Bicester Heritage. We talk about Formula One, the Qatar Grand Prix, with Max Verstappen sealing his third consecutive world title. Andrew has been at the Rennsport reunion recently in California, a big Porsche celebration at Laguna Seca. And we also talk about our long-termers. We've got a couple of BMW long-termers, one that's a new arrival and one that will be departing us very soon. And finally, Andrew's been driving an extremely expensive Bentley. So he talks about that as well. But before we get started, I'll remind you all to rate and review the podcast. It helps us if you... we're talking a glowing review. Let's be honest about this. We want a nice glowing review from all of you, please, because it really helps us to find a new audience, which just means we can do more and more with the podcast. So please do that. Thank you very much and enjoy the episode. We had a good day yesterday, Andrew. You and I were at Bicester Heritage for the Sunday Scramble.
Yeah.
We had a load of cars there, some interesting stuff, I think. But actually, wasn't it just lovely to meet so many TI listeners and subscribers? It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's... I mean, we do get, you know, we have a lot of interaction with people on the website and on the app, and in responses to the podcast and on just on social, Instagram, on Twitter, and that sort of thing. But it's still all in the virtual world, isn't it? And you kind of feel you're living in a bit of a bubble, and then you actually go out there into the real world where sort of real human beings come up to you and say nice things about what you do for a living. And it's just, I mean, it's brilliant for the ego, but it's also, it's just very reassuring.
Yeah,
it's really, really heartened us to see just, you know, and I know we are in a crowd of like-minded individuals, but just how much love there is for everything that we do out there. And I was knocked out by it, really. On an event, you know, our participation aside, they set it out in minutes, don't they?
Yeah, thousands of people, several thousand people.
Yes, it's. I think it's 8,000 people they cap it at. Yeah. And it basically goes as soon as, I think they've got a membership and they get advance warning and then it goes public and it basically everything just goes in as, you know, in a shorter period of time as that people can sign up to it. And it is, it's so different to a, or to any other car event, and it's difficult to explain why. The variety of stuff that is all there is amazing because they've got such amazing different tenants on site, haven't they? They've got everything from sort of Formula E teams to people with anvils and pencils behind their ear and white overcoats and that sort of thing. And they all bring their stuff out. It's completely classless as well. It's just, nobody would ever think, oh, well, that's not really for me.
No, you'll find something. You'll find a lot of stuff that's up your street.
Yeah, and whoever you are and whatever your interest is. I just love the only problem I had with it yesterday is the first time we've had a sort of like an official presence there, and so you and I were kind of welded to the stand, so we didn't get to go and look around. I saw very little of everything else. But yeah, from what people were saying to us and from what I've seen at previous scrambles, I know what a great event it is. And yeah, all power to them. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, so Bicester Heritage were fantastic to us. They put us up on a patch of grass just off the main strip, near to the main entrance. So if you walked into the site, you basically had to walk past us.
Yeah.
And it meant that we were busy all day long, and the cars that we had were just sort of crowded with people basically the entire day, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we managed to fill our little space with some good stuff, didn't we?
No, but did we?
I thought we did well there. Some variety, some pretty rare exotic stuff as well. We had a Porsche Cayman GT4 RS next to a Bentley Batur, which is an unusual car. It's one of 12, isn't it, that Batur?
18.
Worth a lot of money.
18, one of 18, yeah, but that one's worth a lot more because it's the engineering prototype.
Yes.
So it's the first one, and it's the one that did all the work. And if any collector ever wanted a Batur, that would be the one that they wanted, although I don't imagine for a moment that Bentley will ever sell it.
Mm.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that car a bit later on. And then we had a Singer restoration, a DLS.
Oh, my
gorgeous
goodness.
Car. We had it at our live podcast, didn't we, at Henry's Car Barn. It was the same car. And it was fantastic seeing people crawling all over it and just looking at the details going, goodness me, it's beautifully done. It's really amazing.
Some people just didn't understand at all. They thought, well, it's a 911. Mm. And you go, no. It really is so much more than that. And other people who are obviously Singer devotees were just crawling all over it, and it's the attention to detail. It is. I became quite obsessed with the way they did the guttering on the roof line. I've never seen it like that before. I mean, you know, Porsche have these rather sort of pronounced gutters, and if you go to roof, they take the gutters off completely, and Singer do it a completely different way with this sort of rather wavy little channel thing. And just everywhere you look, there's something to look at if you're a complete car geek like we are.
And so there were plenty of those there. I did hear some people saying, talking about the engine, and the engine's very special because it's still air-cooled, but it's got the four-valve head, so four valves per cylinder head, which Porsche never did in period on an air-cooled engine, but Singer with Williams Advanced Engineering have done it. So it was great that people knew that and were sort of spreading the word.
Yeah, and when Porsche finally decided that they absolutely had to have four-valve heads for their air-cooled engine, they water-cooled the heads and left the block air-cooled. I mean, they finally went to... This was in their sort of Group C days with 962s. They finally went to fully water-cooled. But no, absolutely, you know, there was a long period where they had water-cooled heads and an air-cooled block.
That was amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
And then next to the DLS, we had your Bentley blower, the recreation. The car that
sadly,
you raced
not
at...
Not mine, yes.
But you raced at Le Mans Classic this year.
Have they still got my name on the side of it?
Which I
suspect they just haven't got around to taking it off, but... yeah, I feel a very close bond to that. I mean, that car and I had an adventure or two this summer. One of I talked about it on the podcast before, so I won't bang on about it now, but one of the most intense, vivid, and ultimately rewarding experiences of my working life to race that at Le Mans for Bentley at night. But at the time, my goodness, I was scared.
Yeah, and actually, I can understand that, just looking at the thing. It's so unlike anything I've ever driven before. It's got a centre throttle, hasn't it? Crash box.
Yeah. All that can be learned. It's the not being able to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the honking down. I mean, it was doing 116, 117. I mean, it would do, given enough space, it would do 130 before the first chicane. And because they insist, because the car is absolutely accurate down to the smallest detail on vintage headlights, you just can't see. And you know, and you'll be approaching cars that are a little lost in sevens in the same race, which might be doing 70 or miles an hour at most. And yeah, everything else I can cope with, but the not being able to see was just utterly terrifying. Anyway, we survived.
But again, people loved looking over that car, didn't they? They were literally crawling all over it, looking inside, looking at the dials. It was fantastic to
see. Nobody could believe that it was new.
No. Is that right? People genuinely thought
people,
it was...
And they said, tell me about the old one. I said, it wasn't old at all. It's brand new.
Mm.
Yeah. And, and then you tell them the story, and they're just going, "That's unbelievable."
Mm.
And I think what they really struggle to believe is that, and of course you can, because what man has done before, man can do again. But I think they just couldn't believe that a car like that could be created in the 21st century, because it's just
You assume that craftsmanship has been lost to time, don't you?
It's from another time. Beautiful thing.
And that was next to my new long-termer, BMW M2, Zandvoort blue, sort of baby blue colour. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But we were surprised, weren't we? We thought that maybe the Singer would get all the attention, or the new Bentley would get all the attention. But it seemed pretty evenly spread out between the five cars. People were having a good look at all of them.
Yeah, I think it says a lot about the people who go to the Scramble. I think it says a lot about the people who listen and read and watch what we do. And yeah, there was a, you know, I think the colour of the M2 attracted quite a lot of attention.
Some of the styling of it as well. I did hear a lot of people talking about the styling of the M2.
Yeah.
Which is, I understand why. But yeah, so we had a good variety between amongst those five cars. And it was, I just thought it was fantastic to meet so many of you lot, actually, listeners, readers. And I was just struck by how lovely everyone was. Everyone was just sweet and kind and in good spirits. It was really heartwarming. So thank you to everyone who did come up and say hello.
I think that place is blessed. I mean, I don't personally, but if you have a religion and you believe in a God, it's never rained at a Sunday Scramble.
Well, the next one's in January, isn't it?
Yeah, they've never had a wet one. So it's almost as if there is this sort of divine entity which is just sort of drawn a little ring around Bicester Heritage and just said, okay, guys, you know, on a Sunday when you're doing this, we'll look after you. It was glorious weather, wasn't it?
It was beautiful. Probably the last bright, hot, sunny days we've got this year.
Yeah.
So the next one is in January. We'll see what the weather's like for that. But we're going to be there, aren't we?
You bet. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be back. And we need to do better than the five cars that we had.
Or at least as well.
We set the bar high.
But it was quite interesting because we did have some, because lots of manufacturers turn up to it. Not as exhibits, but because, you know, their people are enthusiasts too. And they come along and have a look around and they see us and they go, oh, what are you guys doing here? And that's like, and I said, well, you know, come and say your stuff, next time. So many of them was going, yeah. So you know, we know where the bar is now.
Yeah.
It's quite high, because I reckon between them, the Batur, the old Bentley and the Singer would be worth, conservatively, what, 6-7 million quid?
Probably.
Although,
blimey,
value is not necessarily the most important determinant of these things. But, but we've done that now. And so, it's up to us to do at least as well, if not better, next time.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Formula One, Qatar Grand Prix.
Yes.
We knew it was coming, didn't we? Max Verstappen, third consecutive world championship. It happened on Saturday.
Yeah.
It was never in doubt from really the first, first qualifying session, first race of the year. We knew Max was pretty much a shoo-in, but he's done it in some style.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not going to dwell on this. I mean, I know, and it sounds like, I mean, I understand absolutely why people didn't like Max much in his early years, because he was quite brattish. I haven't seen much of that this year. And again, it's so easy to be magnanimous, isn't it, when you're the bloke leading, don't have a try. And success breeds success. You're so much less likely to get tangled up in something if you're not racing with anybody. You're so much less likely to have a reliability issue if you're not pushing the car as hard as you have to. So the better you do, the better you do. But I still think that he has carried himself well. I was listening to the interview that he did on Sky Sports with Karun this morning, and he just comes across as being a fairly level-headed guy. I'm not sure there's an awful lot to say about his particular performance yesterday, because he did what he does. He just disappeared. And I know he had a slow pit stop, and I know the moment, even the McLarens to me are the story.
Yeah.
And also, Lewis making a very uncharacteristic mistake, which he has put his hands up to completely now, didn't at the time. Do you think it's significant that Lewis is, it's not the first time he's made a mistake this year, whereas I can remember a time when he was like Max is now, when he was just flawless. I can remember, I would say probably in 2020, so the last year he won a championship, I can remember you and I having a conversation and meet towards the end of the season saying, I cannot think of a single mistake he has made in any practice, quali or any race, anything, where you could see he's run off the track or he's tangled with somebody else or anything where you could say, yep, that's down to Lewis. And it's starting to creep in now. Now, maybe that's just because, he's having to try harder. He's in the middle of stuff. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about. When you don't have an ultra-competitive car beneath you, mistakes are more likely to happen. I think he's trying extremely hard to win a race in a car that is a long way off the fastest car on the field, on the grid.
And it must be more difficult for him because he is habitualised to win races, isn't he? It's just what he does. You know, no one in the history of the sport has won more Formula One races than he has. And, you know, unlike, you know, George, who's won one, and so to him it is not second nature. To Lewis, he's out of his comfort zone because he's not where he wants to be. And given, you know, the frustration he must feel at knowing where he should be, knowing where his talents deserve him to be, it must just be that much more frustrating. And I guess frustration can sometimes lead to errors.
I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, is frustration, because he's still, at times this season, he has driven magnificently. He put on pole in Hungary. He might yet, I mean, Sergio Perez has been so off the boil in the last few races, it's bizarre. And if that continues, Lewis might well finish runner-up in the championship, which would be an astounding achievement. It really would be.
And also, you think about the potential race pace of those Mercedes. I mean, I was, you know, I've said it before, and I'm an unabashed George Russell fan. You know, you consider that after that first lap tangle, he was last. Dead last, and had to have, he was able to do it under his own safety car, but he still, you know, he had to have come in and have, you know, he had to do four pit stops rather than three. And he still came fourth. So if he could have done three pit stops and he hadn't been dead last, okay, he wasn't going to win the race because Max had checked out. But I think that Mercedes, certainly on that track, had proper race pace.
It does. It does at certain tracks.
And you know, and obviously the McLarens, Oscar and Lando, did fantastic jobs. But I actually thought, for me, George was, you know, to battle back. I mean, he was just overtaking things left, right and centre. He just stormed through the field. And I thought that was a great drive.
It does have good race pace at certain tracks, that Mercedes. I think Brazil is the one. We know, certainly in qualifying, and it must be in the race as well, the Mercedes doesn't love high-speed corners. There's a very high-speed sequence at Cota next time out, isn't there?
Round the back. Yeah, absolutely.
And but Brazil, I mean, they won it last season, so maybe that's Mercedes' best chance to nick a win this year. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah,
something will have to go wrong. I'm now firmly convinced that for anyone to win a race other than Max requires external influence. No one is going to win a race on merit.
No, it needs Red Bull to have a shocker or to have a problem or something. I agree.
Yeah.
But you were right to mention McLaren, because it is astonishing how they have... Do you remember at the start of the season? They were basically at the back of the grid. They were nowhere.
Yeah, and then Aston Martin have swapped places, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. And now the McLaren is rapid. But I want to talk about Oscar Piastri.
How cool is he?
Yeah, good lad, isn't he? He's a good lad. He seems a great sense of humour. And the boy can drive, goodness me. I wonder if this is the best debut season we've seen since Lewis Hamilton in 2007.
Poor. Well, I don't know. And it depends whether you look at it just as sort of, what's the word? I don't know, but not just looking at data. I mean, Lewis won three races in his opening season,
I think four. Yeah, four. He should have won the championship, really. But Piastri's had two podiums now. He's won a sprint. He put it on sprint pole. He's driving that car beautifully. He's also giving Lando Norris a hard time now.
Yeah, but Lando seems to be loving it, didn't he? I mean, I was very impressed by Lando after the race yesterday. He was just taking the piss out of everybody, having to sit down while he could stand up for the interviews. I mean, it was clearly an absolutely exhausting race.
Yeah, I looked at it.
And he clearly had the legs of Piastri towards the end of the race. But when the team got on the telephone to him and said, OK, just maintain position, you know, he was just going, all right, but why?
Yeah.
But he wasn't spitting the dummy or anything, and... as far as Piastri is concerned, you think of the pressure of basically, forget Max for now, you know, as far as everybody else is concerned, you're out there, you're in front, you're in your rookie season, you've got Lando closing on you fast, You must be utterly exhausted because that we know well from Logan Sargeant having to literally. Mm. When did a driver last retire through exhaustion? I mean, it used to happen in the 70s a bit. Mm. I can't remember the last time. I can remember Mansell sort of keeling over on a podium. I think Nelson Piquet once didn't make it to the podium, I think. I can't remember when a driver last retired a healthy car through just sheer exhaustion. So it must have been really, really tough out there. What was I saying? I completely lost my train of thought.
Well, Piastri seemed very cool under the pressure of Norris behind him.
Exactly that. So, it's, you know, yeah, absolutely exhausted as you would have been. Lando closing in on him and leading the rest of the field. And he was flawless, wasn't he?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's huge credit to him. Also, in the sprint on Saturday, he knew that Max was hunting him down towards the end of that sprint. But he'd looked after his tyres and he checked out just enough to have a cushion that he could roll it through past the checkered flag. So I'm dead impressed with Piastri at the moment.
So am I.
I think he's doing brilliantly. So again, congratulations to Max. We just want to see him with some proper competition now, don't we, at the front of the field, whether that's from his teammate or from another team. I just want to see him in a proper championship fight again, because last time that happened in 2021, we got what I think was the best season ever, or certainly the best season I've ever watched.
But it's not going to happen. It's not. I don't know. How long has Checo's contract got to go?
They say he's in for next year.
If I was Red Bull, I mean, and you know, I know that he's a really, really good guy. But if you're a team, they need someone who can support Max, and they haven't got that. And I'm afraid, I know he had a bit of a blinder at the start of the season, but for too many races now, he's not even close. He can't perform the role of a number two.
Yeah, but this season he hasn't had to. That's the bizarre thing about it.
No, I mean, yeah, but that doesn't mean that Red Bull wouldn't want him to. I mean, he is, we were pretty critical of Bottas in the limitations of him being number two to Lewis. Well, I don't think Checo's now anywhere near that level relative to Max that Bottas was to Lewis. Now, maybe, you know, some people say, oh, yeah, that's because, you know, Max is such an incredible driver. But, you know, Lewis wasn't exactly a duffer, was he?
In the past, Perez has looked better than Bottas did. We have said that as well. Perez, he's looked better, much better than he has done in the last few races.
But
he's so off the boil.
Something in his head just isn't working at the moment. I also think, from Max's point of view, if I was Max, I would want a much better number two, not just because of their ability to support him, but there'd be a bit of me which would be thinking, everybody's going to be thinking, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, it's all very... It's what Lewis is saying. Yeah, but he's never had really serious teammates, which is rubbish. He has had some... It's a bit disrespectful to people like Danny Rick and that sort of thing, but... at the same time, I think Max would think, I do want someone who will keep me on my toes, keep pushing me a little bit. Mm. I mean, not pose a proper threat, but just someone who is a respectful teammate, so people can go, oh, blimey, you know, Max really is that good. Because at the moment, everyone can just say, oh, it's just the car. Which it absolutely isn't. I mean, the car is obviously incredible, but it's not just the car.
Well, it's both, isn't it? But, yeah, I agree. So I don't think the challenge is going to come from within next season or in 2025. But goodness me, I hope it comes from somewhere. I just want to see a great title fight again, because there's nothing better in Formula One than a title fight that ebbs and flows and goes down to the wire. It's just so exciting.
And the next big reg change is not until 26. So we've got two more seasons of continuity of the existing regulations. We saw under the old regime that Red Bull were able to creep up on eventually, rightly or wrongly, in 21, overtake Mercedes. So it's not as if it can't be done within a current set of rules, but it is more difficult. And who would you expect it to be? You'd expect it to be Mercedes, wouldn't you?
Well, the interesting thing for me is that Formula One recently, in recent years, has sort of flipped and flopped between being an aero-dominated formula and a powertrain-dominated formula. Mm. So when the V6 hybrid turbo engines came in 2014... Mercedes built the best one, and they swept everyone aside for years.
Yeah.
2022, we switched to an aero-dominated formula, and with Adrian Newey and all the other brilliant aero engineers Red Bull have, they move to the four and Red Bull and Mercedes slip back. But 2026 probably puts the emphasis back on the powertrain.
And Red Bull are going to have to create their own powertrain with Ford.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really... It's a really interesting point. Nobody talks about powertrains anymore. There were always those conversations, oh yeah, Mercedes got so much more power than the Ferrari or anything. You don't hear those conversations anymore. I don't know who's got the most powerful engine on the grid. It's almost as if it doesn't matter.
I think they're all considered to be pretty much on a level, except the Renault, which, I mean, and they've spoken about this very openly, is down on power. But the others are pretty much on a par. But yet, who knows? 2026 might... It's flip everything on its head, but it's a few years away, isn't it? A couple of years away.
Well, let's hope we don't have to wait until then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Okay, more motorsport then. Very different kind. Tell us about Rennsport. You were in California, yeah. Laguna Seca for it's sort of Porsche's own big celebration, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not going to bang on about this too long because if you weren't there, you weren't there, and it is quite a long way away. But I just think it's quite interesting an event, and to think whether you could do it with Everett, whether any other brand could do it, and whether it could happen anywhere else. So. Rennsport 7, as was, it's the seventh one of these they've done in the last 20 years, is the largest festival for Porsches anywhere in the world. It's like the best way of thinking about it is it's like a sort of mixture between the Goodwood Festival of Speed and the Revival. Festival of Speed in terms of the sheer variety of stuff that's there, Revival insofar as there's proper racing going on the track. And it's for basically everything Porsche, from single-cylinder tractors to their current Le Mans race car. And absolutely everything in between. And if you are a Porsche fan, and I don't imagine it'll become much of a surprise to people listening to this that we kind of are. I mean, it's heaven on earth. You know, there is there's basically nothing, almost nothing. I did try and think of cars that Porsches that I'd want to see which weren't there, and I was down to literally individual cars like a 909 Berg Spider or the 961, the Racing 959, but basically everything else was there. So, you know, if you like the Le Mans cars, 904, 906, 907, 908, 910, 917, 956, 962, and Can-Am cars coming out your ears, IMSA cars coming out your ears. If you're on the road car side, every kind of 911 that there's ever been.
Was everything running or was it mostly static?
Well, there's a huge amount of running stuff, but if it was running, it was racing. There were a few parades, a few demos, but yeah, so, you know, where else would you get to see two Gulf 917s being driven as fast as they can, properly racing?
Oh, gosh, that is
cool. Where else would you get to see 1,000 horsepower Can-Am Porsches racing? Not doing high-speed demos or, you know, the sort of nonsense that I've done, racing. And those incredibly beautiful race cars they did in the late 60s, the 907s and the 908s, these 400-500 kilo fiberglass bullets, to see them racing. And also to go and look at all the curios, all the sort of the homemade Porsches, the sort of the off-road rally raid 911s. So it was one, there was a 1970s thing there. It looked terrible. It was a Targa. And someone had jacked it up, and they'd made new wheel arches by taking tin snips to the existing ones. But it clearly, it was all done out of love. And I was there for 3 days, just wandering around. And also the people, the Porsche people. I mean, name someone who's associated with Porsche, and they were there. From the very, very oldest, people in their 90s. To current race drivers. And, you know, I think I did a list of like 20 odd Porsche heroes who were there. And they were just wandering around. And you know, and again, I mean, I guess like, in a way, like the Sunday Scramble, it was completely classless. You just had to be a fan to feel at home there. And the queues for, you know, to get people's autographs, the queues for the merchandise, you know, were hours and hours long. And everybody loved it. And it was, yeah, it was a great, great event. And I was completely knocked out by it because I've never seen that. I've seen a Festival of Speed is probably slightly bigger, but it's for all cars. I've never seen anything like that dedicated to a single car manufacturer.
Yeah, so who else could do that? We have to qualify this a little bit because in that part of the world, in that part of the country, if Chevrolet took over Laguna Seca and just invited tens of thousands of Corvette owners and had lots of Corvettes there, they'd fill the place, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, many times over, yeah.
But you wouldn't have the variety. You wouldn't have the richness of motorsport heritage and, again, variety of motorsport. You wouldn't have so many different types of car. You'd just have Corvettes. So who else could do that? I don't really know. BMW M could put on a pretty cool event.
Yeah, but it would be... But again, it would be limited in the scope. Mm. I mean, Mercedes is the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Because they can bring all their pre-war Grand Prix cars and their 50s Grand Prix cars and their modern Grand Prix cars. And also, you know, they've won... They can bring Le Mans winners. You know, they have a very rich motorsport history and obviously an incredibly varied road car history too. So I think Mercedes could do it. It would be a different sort of crowd. I mean, Ferrari could also do it. And maybe that is the... But it would be such a different event if it was just Ferraris. Mm. I think it would be... And I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, but I think you get a very different sort of crowd. Mm. And, yeah, I don't know. Whatever it would be, and I'm sure it would be wonderful, it certainly wouldn't be the same.
Mm. No. Agree with that. Yeah, Red Sport. So they don't know when they're going to do the next one, do they? It's not an annual thing or a biannual or whatever.
There's a bloke called Bruce Canepa, who's an absolute dude and a bit of a Porsche legend. And he's this bloke who makes 850 horsepower 959s. and he was racing his 917-10, his 1000, and, you know, and he raced his 935 and he won everything. And he's a consultant to Ren Sport. Mm. And I was talking to him. I was also talking to Angus Fitton, who you'll know, who is the head of public affairs at Porsche in North America, or the USA, certainly. And they both said the same thing. Yes, there will be another one. We have no idea when it's going to be because we're just so knackered we want to go to bed. Angus, I know, is basically, it is... taken up the last 18 months of his life. Mm. You try that hard for that long and you get an event like that. Mm. And it speaks for itself. But they've tended to come. I don't think there's ever been less than 3 years between one. It was 5 years since Rennsport 6, but that was slightly COVID influenced. It'll be a minimum of three before they even think about doing something like that again.
Gosh, well, that does sound like it's going to be unmissable when they do it again. All right, long-termers. We mentioned my new long-termer, BMW M2, which I'm writing about on the Intercooler app and website. I know you've been knocking about in an M2 recently as well.
I have, yeah.
What do you reckon?
Really good. Mm. Okay, your car is significantly better. I've driven two now. And your car is significantly better than either of the ones I've driven in that it doesn't have those silly seats in it. You've got standard seats?
Yeah, just standard seats, yeah, not the
sports seats.
Yeah.
Which have this big hard bit right in the middle. And I'm sure if you're sort of young and thin like you, they're fine. But if you're old and fat like me, they're just a pain in the ass. Particularly with a manual gearbox and you're moving both legs quite a lot. Okay. I'd still rather have a previous generation M2 comp.
This is exactly what I'm currently thinking. It's quite a different car, this new one.
It is quite. It's much heavier. It's bigger. It's obvious. It's less attractive. But, okay, why it is so good that you're running this car long term is when I say to you, I'd rather have an M2 comp. That's not actually what I mean. What I actually mean is I'd rather drive an M2 comp, and that's such a different thing to say. I'd rather drive an M2 comp because it's lighter and more agile and has a bit more feel. That said, I was in Snowdonia and on the Anglesey racetrack in the new M2 in filthy weather last week, and it did really well. It did. I mean, it does not let itself down at all in those environments. So I don't think you're going to find it wanting in those regards. And the fact that it is undoubtedly more comfortable than the old M2 comp, it'll be quieter. That's why we run these cars over extended periods of time, because you can go and read the road test and find out what they're like to drive. But it's always such a different perspective if on a rainy Monday morning you look out your bedroom window and you see it there. And how does that make you feel? If it just kicks off your week to a really good start, then it's fabulous. But, you know, and you've got some horrible long journey to do in dreadful weather, and you just think, okay, I'm basically not leaving home until I get there because I feel so relaxed and at home in it. If, on the other hand, you look out and you just think, oh, really?
Yeah. Ugh, can't be bothered. Yeah,
okay, it might have 1,000 horsepower and lap the Nürburgring in 3 minutes flat, but I just can't be asked because it's such a pain in the ass to live with. And that's what these tests are about. And that's why I'm really interested to see what you think about, you know, what this thing's going to be like over a long period of time. It's the experience that I've had with this M340i I've had, which is very sadly going back to BMW at the end of next week. It's a good car to drive, and we did this triple test, didn't we, with the M3 Touring and with the Alpina B3 Touring, and it came an extremely honourable second in that test.
Yeah, that is live now on both the app and website. It went live on Friday, if you want to go and read that.
Yeah. And really, its success is down to... It's certainly not down to how fast it goes either in a straight line or around a corner. Its success is down to how it presents itself as a usable package over a prolonged period of time. And it just works.
It's lovely, that M340i. I was stunned by it. We've just changed both our cars in my family, and we have a 320i Touring. Similar age, it's a 72 plate, so a facelift car. It's a really lovely car. But your M340, it actually rides better. It's a lot faster.
Yeah, it would be that. I'm surprised it rides better.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's on adaptive dampers, which I think must help. But I think it's a really, really brilliant car. I'd love one, actually.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a couple of years down the line, I think it would be a fantastic, well, as you know, everyday car and long distance car.
I've driven it to Bosnia and back. I can confirm its credentials in that regard.
Yeah. So this M2, it's in that very, that baby blue colour, Zandvoort blue, which I think the colour's growing on me. The styling is still a bit challenging. What I was talking to a lot of people about it at Bista yesterday, and most people have their sort of reservations about the way the car looks. And
I
agree. Some of the styling is very blocky and sort of heavy-handed.
Particularly the sort of rear three-quarter.
I find the front bumper quite challenging.
No, I agree.
But there was...
And the colour doesn't help because it does make all that stuff.
It shows it all off, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I was having interesting conversations with two people about the way the car looks. One I was following in as we drove into Bicester. He was in a Caterham R400. And he said that in his mirrors, on the road, okay, forget the sort of the styling elements, but the stance of the car, the proportions, the way it seems to sit on the road. He said it looked brilliant. Which is, it's actually an important thing because, when you see a car moving at a decent speed down a road, you see it in a very different light compared to when it's just sat static. And another interesting conversation was with Adam Gompertz, Revs Limiter, who is a friend of ours. And he was a car designer, trained car designer. And it's so interesting to watch him looking, poring over a car, because he's seeing totally different things to me. Mm. You know, I look at a car and go, okay, it's, in the case of the M2, sort of three-box shape. It's got wheels here, and it's got slightly messy styling at the front. That's what I see. But he was really poring over it and looking at how, the surfacing down the side of the car, down the doors, there are two lines that sort of intersect in a slightly awkward way. And I hadn't bloody spotted that until he pointed it out to me.
No, but
so
yeah,
it's really clever.
Designers tend to talk in this. Well, they talk in designer language, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Which I've never been very good. I've always felt a bit inadequate when talking to those guys, and they start talking about all those sorts of things. So I've never really understood what they're talking about. But yeah,
it's just a very different perspective.
It still adds up to a car, which ain't great to look at.
Yeah, sadly. So this one has got the manual gearbox option, which is now a cost option. It's according to the BMW configurator.
That's cheeky, isn't it?
It's £1,200 according to the configurator. So
that's
not
really
even a couple
cheeky.
Hundred quid, you know.
No. And that's not because it costs them £1,200 or even £500 more to fit it. It's because they think they can get away with it.
Yeah.
It's just cheeky, isn't it? Because, I mean,
it is.
It always used to be, well, in all cars, the manual was standard, then you pay for an auto if that's what you want. Because an automatic gearbox is inherently more complicated, bigger, heavier, and more expensive.
On the other hand, and I wrote about this in the piece introducing the car, how many performance coupes with a powerful pure petrol engine, no hybrid, can you buy these days for less than 70 grand? There's not many.
Can you get a Cayman GTS? No, you can't. Not
a GTS, no. I mean, there will be...
Well, no, but if it's less than that, it won't have a naturally aspirated engine. Oh, but you know, that's not part of the...
So you could have a Cayman of some sort or a Boxster.
Yeah.
You could have a Toyota GR Supra, a Mustang of some sort. You could have a GR86, although you can't order one at the moment. They're so limited in supply. So just to be able to still buy a car with that... of that basic layout and configuration is a good thing. And actually, to the point where it, certainly when I first drove the car, it felt unusual to be driving a modern, brand new performance car with a stick. Mm. It was odd.
It's good, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I love that you can still do it. But
yeah, not for much longer, I fear.
No, I know. So I'm enjoying the car at the moment. You're right. It's one of those cars that will... It's really worth running as a long-termer because... My first impressions when it first got delivered here and I took it out around the block and then a couple of days later when I went a bit further in it, I was thinking, oh, I don't really know what this car is all about. It felt so different to the previous one, so different to what I was expecting. But as you've already suggested, I suspect over time, the fact that it's actually pretty spacious, the fact that it is comfy, it's undemanding in normal driving, it's really quick. All those things, it's got loads of kit, all those things are going to make it, I think, quite a pleasant car to live with. And actually doing so that you get beneath the skin of a car, isn't it?
Yeah, I've no doubt at all that you'll get on with it very well.
So I'm going to be writing about that every few weeks on the app and website. So if you want to know more about what it's like to live with the M2, you're going to have to tune into those. A little bit about the Bentley Batur. Again, we've mentioned this one already. One of 18. What exactly is it? Because it looks like a Continental GT with bespoke carbon bodywork. That's basically it, isn't it?
Okay, so it's one of these very limited series. So the Bacalar was the first one.
Which is the open one, isn't it?
Which is the open one. And it's part of these, but yeah, and also, you know, the not old blower, which we were talking about earlier, is, you know, I think they made 12 of those. They're part of these very, very limited series runs of extremely special cars that Bentley makes. The point of the Batur is, firstly, it's kind of a clue to Bentley's future styling direction. There's a completely new design language that it sort of showcases, and it's much more... What's the word? I think it's more conventional, but it's more sporting and it's more, I think it's slightly more aggressive. I really like the way it looks. There's some people on Twitter who'd be going on and say, oh, it looks like a Genesis. I really like the way the Genesis looks. So I don't think
really
a
Genesis.
Of,
wow.
Yeah. who knows? So it's got a carbon body. And the point of it from a customer's point of view is, A, I suspect the number one point of it, it'll probably be a bomb-proof investment for them because they'll be so rare. But it's a design exercise, and particularly on the interior, I think there are like two panels you can't touch. Otherwise, anything goes. So you basically create your own car cabin with it. And you can have any material rendered any way you like, and you just work with. So I think the sort of, I think it was 1.65, 1.75 million, the sort of nominal cost for these things. Actually, that's, it's almost an irrelevance, because it just depends how long you spend with the designers, how much weird and wacky stuff you want, and how long it takes for it all to be prepped and that sort of thing. So I imagine the actual, I'm sure, but I know that no two butters are alike, and I imagine the high low of what they cost their customers, you know, might vary by as much as £1 million. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
In terms of the sort of the good stuff, obviously the carbon body saves a lot of weight. It's got no rear seats either. They've turned the engine up to 730 horsepower.
And it's the 12, isn't it?
Yes, the W12. It's the ultimate iteration of the W12.
Which is being retired, isn't it?
Yeah, with an avalanche of torque. It was actually, it was my wheels home from the Sunday Scramble yesterday. And you and I were both quite tired by the end of it, because, you know, we were on our feet all day and having a great time. And I got in it and I was thinking, well, you know, and this car, it's the engineering prototype. So it's had a life, and it's left-hand drive, and it's actually got this big red button, which I was told not to pull unless the car was literally on fire. So I'm not, because that just literally just shuts everything down. And all prototypes have to have that. It's a standard part of, I think it's a required part of prototype kit. I was quite tired. My goodness, if you want something to keep you awake, it is so ridiculously fast. I've never driven a Bentley like it. It just, I suspect it's because it's done 16,000 miles, so it's nicely loosened up. It didn't feel like 730 horsepower to me. It felt like about 900 horsepower. It was, I was laughing. It was so fast. I couldn't believe how rapid this thing was. It went from one place to another place by, I just left out all the places in between the two. It was.
So have they tried to make a supercar out of the Conti GT, or is it still a Grand Tourer?
It's still very much a Grand Tourer. It's still very much of that. It's a Conti GT. It just in terms of how it performs, it's a Conti GT turned up to about 14, I guess. I was surprised by how rapid it felt. It was a great thing to tool about in. And they're going to come and take it away again today.
Pity. I did get a lot of attention. I guess that purple paint is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I wish I wasn't quite so colourblind, because everyone was going on about the paint. Some people thought it was absolutely incredible. Some people were less complimentary about it. And I just sit in and go, yes, great, wonderful. I've never heard what you're talking about.
It is a very vibrant purple colour.
Okay.
I'm sure it photographs brilliantly. We are running out of time. We've got a listener question coming up. But before that, I'll remind you all just to subscribe or follow to this podcast. Whatever app you're using, hit the subscribe button or the follow button. It means you don't miss an episode, but it helps us a lot as well, so please do that. So the question comes from Tom Roberts. Tom, thank you. Which car's appearance is most at odds with how it drives?
Oh, blimey. Can I go a bit older?
You can. You're very welcome to. I'm going a bit newer, so yeah, that's better.
Okay. X350, the Jaguar XJ from about 2004. It looked just like the one before it. But it was, I think it was the first car ever to have a full aluminium monocoque, because Audis had always had space frames. It was, I think, the body, so the monocoque, I think was 40% lighter than the steel one it replaced, and it was something like twice as stiff.
Wow.
It was an absolute engineering revolution. And it drove accordingly. It was hundreds and hundreds. It's like something like 300 kilos lighter than the car it replaced, despite the fact that it was a physically much larger car. And you drove it, and it was absolutely incredible. But to look at, it looked like something that you'd see parked up in the chairman's slot at the local, golf course. It was so state. So this car was designed by a bloke called Jeff Lawson, who was a lovely man, who sadly died well before his time. And it was his last car. And Ian Callum came in, but I think, I mean, you know, Ian would need to speak for himself on this. I think that Ian thought that the car probably needed to look a bit more dynamic, but there wasn't a great deal he could do to it inheriting the project at the time, because it was basically done. And so there was some detail work on it, but it does look very, very traditional. It looks very retro. It looks like a 1960s XJ6. And yet, the way that it drove, it wasn't just of its time, it was way ahead of its time. So yeah, and I've always had a bit of a soft spot for them, because they're just so incongruous. You look at one thing and you drive another and they're the same car.
Good answer. I'm not that satisfied with mine, but I think I can make a case here for the BMW i8. Just because it's so low and swoopy, it is so supercar like. It really does look like a supercar. It has that presence, that look to it. But actually, it's comfy, it rides.
Yes.
It's got light steering, doesn't have a great deal of grip, quite skinny tyres.
Yeah.
And I think if you asked most people who look at it, who didn't know what it was, they'd probably assume it had a big old engine, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Not a 1.5 litre engine from a 3-cylinder engine from a Mini.
So maybe that qualifies. Good call. I8. So Tom, thank you for your question. Keep them coming, and we'll end next week's podcast with another listener question. And thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.